Thanks for that, guys. Now, the idea of a strategic shift towards banking platforms was one of the most significant financial talking points of 2017. But did we really see this business model develop? What is actually feasible in this space? And will it forever change the consumer face of banks? To shed light on this, our next panel will discuss from a number of different perspectives. Please join me in welcoming KPMG's Warren Mead in conversation with the CEO of Starling Bank, Anne Bodden, the CEO of Movin, Brett King, and the Chief Innovation Officer of ING Group, Ignacio Julia Villar.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're well and enjoying the Madrid sunshine. So my name's Warren Mead. I'll be your moderator for this session where we'll be talking about open banking and platformication. So I'm delighted to be joined by three awesome contributors to this panel. We've got Anne Bodden. She probably needs no introduction to many of you. She's one of the global power women. Awesome. Congratulations on that. And the CEO of Starling Bank, Brett King. Brett, many of you will know Brett. He's one of the industry titans, the CEO of Movin and a published author a gazillion times. And Ignacio Julia Villar, who's the CIO, Chief Innovation Officer of ING Group and the Head of Retail Banking. So let's just do some scene setting. Let's level off where we're at. What on earth do we mean by open banking and platformication? So Brett, why don't you just pick off quickly what we mean by open banking?
It's interesting, actually. If you look in the UK, we've tried to define this legally as the ability to have portability of a bank account, but really that's not what it means in sense of the larger movement of open banking. What's happening right now is we're taking the utility of banking, we're creating a new technology layer that's not necessarily owned by banks. So that ability, PSD2 and these other APIs around banking, is the ability to plug into the banking rails and architecture, but surface that utility of banking in a much more flexible and open manner. And this is where the fintech ecosystem is meeting banking. And a great example of this is what's happening in China right now, where 70% of mobile payments in China are done through two technology platforms, Tencent WeChat and Alipay. And this is, in other markets, an area that's dominated by banks in terms of payments. But this is a good example of how open banking is really changing the way the utility and banking experiences will change in the future based on this technology layer.
Okay, thank you. So you mentioned PSD2 there. Let's just be clear on what we mean by that. Anne, you're the expert on PSD2.
Rarely do you hear a banker talk about a love for legislation, but Payment Services Directive has been a godsend to the fintech industry. PSD1, this first iteration, it created me money licenses, it created the fintech movement where people that weren't traditional bankers started doing financial services. PSD2 is the most powerful set of legislation that allows the definition of APIs between entities. PSD2 is going through introduction into various countries across Europe at the moment. The UK is leading the way on that with its implementation a year early and open banking. But when PSD2 works in a couple of years' time, you could have the situation where, say, Barclays could be providing the back-end account. You could be using an ING or an HSBC app. And you could be using all those various entities in a different way to do what they're really good at, connecting using an API infrastructure. Starling Bank, we have the first open APIs for a current account that connect into payments available in Europe. And we're launching a bank all around getting APIs and PSD2 right.
Great, thanks, Anne. So that's open banking, PSD2. Ignacio, do you want to add to that? How do you wrap that all up in the term platformication? I can barely say it.
Yeah, so when we think about platform, what we are trying is
how to become relevant for our clients to serve all their financial needs via the platform that we are serving. And I think part of it was mentioned today, but that's where the advantage of the banks comes today. Because if I look at ING, for instance, we already have 2.4 billion interactions with our customers, and the challenge that we have and the opportunity is what do you do with this traffic? And this is to be able to serve the needs for your customers in financial needs and even going beyond. And this is where we will see very interesting developments forward. There, the banking industry, it's changing the way we are understanding interaction with the customers. So we are really changing from a product approach to a customer need approach and trying to support the customers in their financial decision making. The aggregation plays also an important role because at the end we are managing the customers. And there we are adding services that will be relevant, or that we are trying to make them relevant for the customers so that they stay with us. If I think of us, half of our customers, they connect with ING every day. So that's already a good beginning of what a platform means.
So just a second, Matt. So in a sense, we've got this coming together of a regulatory environment which is becoming favourable, technology which is enabling change, and customers that are demanding change.
Absolutely.
If you add all those three things together, Brett, what does... Let's pick 5 years' time. How does all of this change the way that banks operate?
So this is where it gets really interesting, is we are seeing a really different shift in terms of how banking is integrated in people's lives. So we're moving from the bank as a business with products and services through channels to the surfacing of core utility of banking experientially in people's lives. So whether that is with voice user interface or augmented reality glasses in 10 years' time, or you know, the use of AI, what's happening is we're distilling banking down to this pure experiential capability. We're moving away from the products of banking to sort of utility. If you think about it, in retail banking, there's only going to be really three products in the future. There's going to be a value store, the ability to move money, payments, and access to credit. And these will be surfaced with experiences wrapped around them. So, for example, you walk into a store, we know that you've looked at a new iPhone, and you'll get an in-store financing offer. Or you walk into Trader Joe's in New York or Sainsbury's in London, and we know how much you spend on groceries normally, and we know you don't have enough in your debit account today to do that, so we'll surface an emergency cash offer in store. So we won't be selling you a credit card anymore, or a line of credit, or an overdraft. We'll be surfacing credit utility experientially based on when and where you need it. Now what this means is that there's a fundamental shift in what constitutes the real capabilities of a bank to deliver to customers. And it's not channels and products anymore. It's the ability to understand customers' behavior, when and where they need banking, and surfacing that utility when and where they need it.
If I may, yeah. This is actually what has been banking for ages. So if you think 30 years ago, this was the role of the branch advisor. So you were going there, he knew you by name, he knew if you wanted to buy a house, if you had to pay the school for your kids, and he was adding value. With the digitalization of the world and then more than 50, 60, 70% of the interaction going digital, the key is how you understand the customer behavior to be able to add value. And the winners will be those that are able really to transform this interaction into added value for the customer. That's where the winners will be.
And do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said so far. And the important point is, at the moment, people have real difficulty visualizing what the world's going to be like. You know, we can talk about it, but we're in it every day. In future, we will have platforms where people will have accounts that they'll access lots of different services. You'll get the best product from the best provider, and they'll come together in marketplaces. We have a chief platform officer. We see ourselves not as somebody that sells you banking products, but somebody that provides an environment, a marketplace, where you can go to get the best products to serve your needs.
Okay. And so there's a very important element that we haven't mentioned yet, that is the trust and the liability. Because at the end, we're still talking about the money of the people. We are trying to support the people to reach their goals. But there's a very strong element around the trust, because we have, as banks, we are responsible for the savings of our customers. And
this is where also you see today some advantage from the banks versus the non-banks.
I don't agree.
That, well, this is what the customers are telling us, and we have a very strong advantage.
So why do customers trust banks?
Why do they trust banks? Because
is it a deposit guarantee? Is it because they have a license? I think the reason...
It's because of the regulations.
I don't think it is. I think it comes down to utility. I think the reason that I trust a bank is I can go to an ATM machine, I put in my card, I can get cash out, I know it works, right? Now, here's the thing, is that if you go to China or you go to Kenya with M-Pesa, where you have these new banking paradigms that are non-bank networks that have succeeded, they've got trust through utility. And I think ultimately, if it works from an experiential perspective, the banks don't have any differentiation in that space. Because right now, the utility that's surfacing that's differentiated, you know, Apple Pay just launched yesterday P2P. We've got Alipay and Tencent in China, and M-Pesa in Kenya, Paytm in India. It's the utility that's providing trust for those networks. None of those people have deposit guarantees or banking licenses in the conventional sense.
The world's just got tougher. As a bank, as well as having the name, you have to provide utility, you have to provide the experience, you have to be flexible, you have to respond. Bank gives you some sort of guarantees.
Absolutely.
It gives you some sort of reassurance. The hurdles of becoming a bank are very, very, very high, I know. But we can't just rest on those particular...
Let me get this back on track, right? So, you two have set up banking or banking-type operations, right? Based on platform-based business models. But surely the people that are really going to win this are the people that are already operating multi-billion, trillion-dollar platforms like Google and Amazon and all those guys. So, kind of, isn't there a flaw in your strategy? We're getting back to open banking and platformication.
I think that we're in a world where we're cooperating. You know, you have banks on one side that want to sell you all the products, whatever your needs. It's all about cross-selling and upselling. You have the big tech companies, the Googles, the Amazons of this world. And then in the middle, you have the people where we're going to actually focus on providing services where there's needs, for delivering services people want, and providing a range of services that that customers can trust. And I think that we are living in that world. And we may have a world in future where the banks provide the back end and the Googles and the Facebook provide the front end. In the world of PSD2, that is possible.
So can you see Stan plugging into Google, and will you give away control, if you like, of the customer relationship?
We cannot, as banks, prevent that happening. In the world of PSD2, we have to drive and make sure that all our services are open. And if we're not on the desktop, if we're not the app on the phone of our customer, well, that's our fault.
Yeah.
We have to deliver service that customers want, and we may be displaced by the Googles and the Facebooks unless we are good enough. And that is good for customers because it drives up service, it actually responds to innovation, and it's best for customers.
Okay, so Ignacio, ING, you're running a big bank. Can you imagine a world where you start selling other bank products on your platform?
Yeah, absolutely. And in our beyond banking thinking, so we want to be the place to go for financial needs and beyond. And what we want actually is to connect where the customer is, so with other platforms. And there we are already extending the services that we are provided. And
But what about your core services? Can you see it going to making a car loan or a... You know, one of the things that you see as your own, would you go that far?
So, as you know, we launched last week in the UK, Yolt, that it's a different business model, so it's an aggregator where we are presenting the financial products of other institutions to support the customers to manage their daily banking, and also adding services like choosing electricity. We are testing different models because we see how the trends of the customers are evolving, and we need to be relevant for them. That's the key. So we keep talking about us, we need to talk about the customers, and we have to evolve towards where the customers are. But again, I insist, today one of the strengths is we do have the customers, we do have the interaction, and that's our key advantage if we do it right, because we are becoming relevant for our customers.
Okay, so Brett, I'm going to come to you. Let's talk about the journey, right? So we're going to go from today, an age where in some countries we still have checks and we still have, you know, paper statements and all that kind of stuff, to a world you're describing of platforms, there's a hell of a lot to do between now and then, and a lot that could go wrong. So what do you think the main things are that are going to stop us getting to that future?
I don't think anything's going to stop us getting from that to that future. I mean, you see the acceleration around crypto and blockchain and things like that at the moment. You know, these technology platforms that are becoming dominant from a payments movement perspective. From a fintech perspective, we're seeing on average $20 to $30 billion a year in investment in fintech. So the momentum to restructure the way we think about banking, I mean, this started long ago. So it's inevitable that these changes will occur. You know, and we are having that blockbuster borders moment in banking right now. The banks that survive this will be banks that are open to thinking differently about their value and place in the world. Just to give one example, if you think about 7 to 10 years out and what blockchain may produce as a shift in the industry, one of the you know, things I took away from you know, some of the discussions this morning is that banks probably won't be in the identity business in 10 years' time. It makes no sense for banks to do KYC in the future. As soon as you can have a way to passport or you know, have identity packaged in a certain way, then banks, you know, it makes no sense for them to duplicate that functionality of verifying someone's identity. That's something that, you know, should be out there. But in the regulatory environment for this to occur, how do you get a regulator to say a bank no longer has to do KYC, that they can outsource that to a platform like Facebook or Apple, who has biometrics and has a whole lot of depth around heuristics that makes it really far superior as an identity platform from this current process of looking at physical documents and you know, utility bills in a bank branch.
Okay, and do you want to add anything around things that could go wrong? I'm worried about cyber, and I think cyber risk massively increases in a world of platformication.
Yeah, I think that certain organizations are built for an open world. We have built our technology to be open and therefore is secure. It has a minimum amount of periphery that we can secure it well. There are lots of things that go wrong, but the question is, we shouldn't hold back progress. We shouldn't prevent people from getting products that will improve their financial life because we're scared, we don't have the money for investment. You know, people today can use open APIs. There's people out there that are currently developing apps that connect into real bank accounts using real APIs that are giving new value to customers. And we're working in a very collaborative way, in a very highly secure way. Lots could go wrong, but we have to be going out there. The big banks, you know, are trying to protect the customer bases, quite rightly so. Banks must be places where you can put your data and it must be protected, but we shouldn't hold back progress.
Okay, Ignacio, unintended consequences. Let's imagine we move to the world that you three have described, with these brilliant platforms, great customer outcomes. What could go wrong if we develop a world like that?
But before going to this question, because you were asking what is preventing us, and I would like to bring one topic to the discussion,
okay. That
it's the culture of the organization. Because it's much easier said than done. When we say we want to be customer-centric, and then we want to have a process that is mean and it's easy and transparent and relevant, that's actually very difficult to do. And this is what is preventing all the movements, and I'm absolutely aligned with you. The winners will be those that manage this change and the cultural change of the organization to really be obsessed with creating a differentiated customer experience. And again, this is also nothing new. If I think of ING Direct many years ago, that's the same example. This was a savings bank. It was not that disruptive. Today it would be called a fintech, but we had a very simple product, very accessible, and covering one very easy need. And that's really the transformation of products, service, information, etc., etc. That's the challenge. Building an app is not a challenge. Making it successful, that it's used, that it serves a need, that's the challenge. And we need to change the way we are working. And this is something that I wanted to address.
This is one of the easiest arguments for why fintechs and banks should work together.
Absolutely.
Because fintechs don't have that cultural problem, and they can deploy capital far more efficiently because they don't have to battle against culture and compliance and legal and legacy systems. So, you know, for a bank that wants to shift culture, sometimes they can outsource that changing culture through a fintech partnership.
Okay, and
I think you said what could go wrong.
Yes.
I think we have to consider that in what could go wrong for the industry, the banking industry, what could go wrong for customers, and what could go wrong for the big banks and the small banks. And the purpose of PSD2, the purpose of APIs, the purpose of innovation is to make things better for customers. If this is successful, customers will benefit greatly. If this is successful, there's going to be less profit for banks. And I think that's the thing we have to get to grips with and realize that to respond in this environment, the big banks will have to cut their cost bases dramatically. And it's not a question of them delivering value or delivering product. The big banks are very innovative and can create those products, but can they slim their cost bases fast enough to be in the business long enough to compete?
Okay, thank you. I think I should give you a right of reply on that in terms of the big banks and cutting their costs. Is that the only way to survive?
I find interesting the big banks. We consider ING as a customer-centering bank. We have 36 million clients. I think we are one of the most advanced banks in the digitalization, in the full transformation, with very strong proven cases like the ING Direct, and also we are seeing this in the growth countries. We see this in Poland, very successful, in Turkey, now launching aggregators like in Yolt. So actually, I don't see this as a burden. I see this as a benefit, because we have the number of clients, we have the interaction, we have a number one NPS in most of the markets we operate, so our customers are actually our strongest advocates, so we take this as an advantage to lead this transformation. What we cannot do is to slip behind, but to be on the forefront, and this is what we are trying, and this is why the innovation role is actually very relevant, to change the culture so that the 54,000 employees are really moving ahead and pushing so that we evolve as an organization.
Okay, we are almost out of time, so I'm going to give you each 30 seconds for final comments. In that, just so we can have a bit of fun, I'd like you to imagine that I've given you $1 million to invest.
Yeah.
The what, sorry?
$1 million to invest. Where in financial services or technology would you invest that $1 million? So final statements, and where would you invest that $1 million I've gifted to you? We'll just go down the line one each, 30 seconds each.
Ignacio. In ING, of course.
In ING. That's a very corporately correct answer.
Absolutely.
Thank
but
you.
I'm 100% convinced.
Okay.
Brett, where would you?
In pure return, you'd probably put it in Ether coins today. But in respect to institutional change, I would be looking at the revolutionizing of advice through artificial intelligence.
Okay. And Anne?
I'd give it to 10 small fintechs and say, get logged on to the Starling Bank APIs and create something wonderful. And one of those 10 could change the world.
Wonderful. Well, there we are. So thank you very much. I'd like to thank all three of my panelists. They've been great. So Anne, Brett and Ignacio, if you can welcome them, thank them in the usual way. Thank you very much.